On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're back in the dating game with Jesse Eisenberg for Fleischman Is in Trouble on Disney Plus, getting mixed up with the wrong sort of people alongside Amanda Abington in Desperate Measures on Channel 5, and dabbling in a little international espionage in the company of Vincent Cassel in Apple's Liaison. And wouldn't you know it, but Cassel himself also joins us on the show this week to talk a little bit more about that one. But that is not all, because Billy Crudup took time away from selling timeshares on the moon to stop by and talk hello tomorrow as well. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV Podcast, your weekly guide to every show that matters. With me, despite their better judgment and the advice of both friends and relatives, are, of course, my two co-hosts, our Supreme Chancellor, Mr. Boyd Hilton, and Pilot TV's newly minted champion for all things foreign language, our subtitled superhero, it's Kay Ribeiro. How are you, Kay?
Very good, thank you.
Are you happy with this? This
yes,
new mantle
I
of
like
yours?
This.
You
yeah.
are the doyen of foreign language shows.
Mais oui. Yeah.
Oh, very good, very yeah. good. Très bon.
That's as far as I can go.
C'est good.
C'est good. Yeah.
Excellent. But that's not the only thing, is it, Kay? You're not just our foreign language correspondent, as the headphones literally fall off your head.
Not excitement.
You are also teed up to become our latest Star Trek correspondent. Isn't that right?
Look, we've got an agreement in place. I won't renege on that. I'm going to do it, but I'm putting it off as long as possible. So I haven't yet watched it.
Okay.
I'm going to have to get up early tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the best idea, because it's going to set me up, you know.
For the day.
Yeah, in a bad way, I'd say. But anyway, yeah. So I'm going to do it tomorrow morning. We'll see what I think.
So for those of you who don't know what we're referring to, we are, of course, talking to the Cultural Exchange, which we agreed last week, whereupon I convinced Kay that she was missing out by not embracing science fiction to her bosom, not literally, and said that she should watch some Star Trek and that we would pick some for her. And we have done so using the help of the internet.
Of course, by the way, of course you did a poll.
I did a poll.
Boyd, I don't know if you saw this. James, in his infinite wisdom, and of course in his infinite geekiness, he couldn't just decide like I've done, but he had to do a poll and make it all techie.
Yeah, I wasn't added in thankfully, into the initial discussion on the Twitter, so I didn't see the poll at all for a bit.
So you didn't get to vote?
No, I didn't get to vote or anything. Yeah, and then belatedly, I saw it when someone did eventually add me in, basically to complain about something or other, I think.
What we should say is that's not a one-way street, James, because the agreement was I would watch some of your sci-fi if you watch some of our...
Reality bollocks.
No, not reality bollocks. I feel like you've attached such a negative connotation to reality. What should we talk... You know, just entertainment shows, right?
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I've got a short list, but for deaths, I know that you will be watching Traitors.
Okay. So the way this is going to work... So this is a multi-part cultural exchange. We are beginning this week with an exchange whereby I have agreed to watch... Now, you've picked an episode of The Traitors for me to watch.
The first one.
The first episode of The Traitors. This is so that I'll understand the concepts and not just be baffled by what's going on.
Yeah, because otherwise we'll have to hear about, like, why did this happen? Oh, that makes no sense. So go in at the beginning of it, watch it, get hooked, and then...
I have a crucial question. What is the runtime of The Traitors?
An hour.
Is it an hour? A whole hour?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why?
Oh, no, an hour that is 40 minutes long.
Okay.
Yes, a whole hour.
Yeah. Well,
that might be the most moronic thing he's ever said. And his eyes lit up, then he goes, oh, great, a 40-minute hour. No, an hour,
but genuinely,
minutes.
Like a 40-minute hour is a thing, because it's like when you take out the ad breaks, that's a 40-minute hour.
BBC One.
I didn't know that. I'd expect better from the BBC. Look, I've agreed to watch The Traitors. I will watch it tomorrow morning before Pilot Plus, where we will be discussing this. But in exchange, Kay... This is what the internet had to say. So I polled the internet and I said to them, I quite want to introduce Kay to a variety of Star Trek, the many textures of Trek. So I said, let's start with an X-Gen and then we'll move on to a DS9. So we're going to start with an X-Gen. And I suggested three possible episodes. Number one, The Inner Light. Now, The Inner Light, is one that I got Terry to watch during our cultural exchange. I genuinely can't remember what she thought of it, but I think she quite enjoyed it. I could be wrong. Now, which is a very Picard-centric episode. It's quite a sentimental episode. It's quite a touching episode. We'll see. That was an option. I also suggested Chain of Command, which is a two-parter. So you dodged a bullet that people didn't vote for this because it's a double episode. Yeah. But it's really hardcore and it involves Picard being tortured by a Cardassian. That's a Cardassian. He is literally keeping up with the Cardassians in this particular one.
I've been waiting to say that.
I have. Yeah. And then the third one I chose, which was The Measure of a Man, which is a data-driven episode, literally. It is Data goes on trial to establish whether or not he is an individual, for he is a robot. His name's Data.
Right. No, I've seen that episode.
Yeah, so it's a courtroom drama.
That is a good episode.
And it's about what makes a person a person, makes someone.
Are you giving Kay the choice of which?
Well, so I put it to a poll on Twitter and they voted for The Measure of a Man at 39%.
Fine. That's a good choice.
In third place was Chain of Command, 1 and 2, with 29%. And second place was The Inner Light with 32%. But Kay is not one to respect the rules of democracy. So she has said to me that she doesn't want to watch The Measure of a Man, despite the fact the internet thinks she would. She says that she wants to watch The Inner Light, which I have to say, might be...
A mistake.
No, might be the wise move for her. I wonder whether she might prefer...
It's got more heart to it, you said.
The Inner Light, yeah. It's you know, it's slightly more sentimental, I would say.
Although now Boyd, the fact that Boyd's saying I should watch the courtroom drama then is swaying me, so...
Because I'm thinking I actually want Kay to at least partially... Enjoy is a strong word. Tolerate it.
Mm.
And I worry
what
that...
What do you think? Boydo, what do you think? I'm going to do whatever you say.
Fine. Go with it. Go with the flow. Go with the...
The courtroom.
No, the popular choice.
No, the popular choice was The Measure of a Man.
You were going to override
it. No, me. Kay was going to override it. And I was going to endorse
Boyd
her overriding
Boyd
of it.
Boyd has actually switched off.
Yeah. I mean, he rarely listens to me at the best of time.
Blame me.
So, The Inner Light or The Measure of a Man. Kay, right here, right now. Choose.
I am going to go against my original overriding.
Oh.
I am going to go with what the people want, / what Boyd has said is good, better. He knows me quite well, so the fact that Boyd says I should...
I don't remember much about the other episode, to be honest.
So to be fair, The Measure of a Man is one that I recommended a lot of people watch before they watched Star Trek Picard, because it sets up a lot of the themes of Star Trek Picard.
Yeah, let's go with that.
The Inner Light, however, is very much a standalone one. It's a very famous episode of Star Trek, because it does something... I contrary to what the internet thinks, I think you probably would enjoy The Inner Light more than The Measure of a Man.
No, I'll go with what... I mean, a lot of people engage with this. Even though I said, please don't engage with James, people are getting really into it. And if they've said I should watch the courtroom drama, I'll do that.
Okay, The Measure of a Man it is. So you have to watch that by the time we record Pilot Plus tomorrow, and you can find out what Kay thought of that on Thursday for the super cheap price of $1.99 a month.
And also, you'll find out what James thinks of the traitors, more importantly.
Sure, because there's going to be loads of suspense around that.
No, wait a minute, hold up, right? No.
Hey, my mind is open. It is open.
It's not.
Like an open thing, like a flower. It has opened.
God. No, it's not. Listen, no, I'm being serious now.
I'm going to watch it.
If I'm going to dedicate an hour to your sci-fi stuff.
Bullshit.
Yeah, I don't want to swear.
Hey, Boyd.
You're supposed to
be on my side.
Ever since you said your mum listens to this, I'm trying to cut down my swearing and calling him a twat.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
Anyways.
James's mum is known for her profanity.
Boyd. Anyway. So if I'm doing this properly and I'm going to keep an open mind, you need to as well.
Okay.
You can't just go in being belligerent.
There's a slight problem with
James.
Well, yeah. There's many, many slight and major problems with James. But there's a slight problem with the traitors in that the first episode isn't really the best, is it?
I know.
Yeah.
But otherwise he won't understand.
I know. It's a bit of a quandary, that one.
Okay.
Because
what about he watches two?
You have to wait for week two.
Right.
Week two of this, where we move on to you, Kay, where we move you on to Deep Space Nine. But week two of this, I thought you'd pick a different show for week two of this. But if you want to give me another Traitors, that's entirely up to you.
The only thing is, Boyd, if we go into the last episode, which was fantastic, for example, it's going to be completely lost on him.
Oh, I know. It's difficult because your show that you're choosing from, it's fine. These episodes make perfect sense in and of themselves, right?
And to be fair, I have tried to pick ones I genuinely think she'll like.
So people
were saying, best of both worlds. I'm saying, it's one of the best episodes, but she will hate it.
Right. But the great thing about the Traitors is, Traitors is that once you get past the premise, it's all about how it evolves over,
right.
20 episodes or something? So, I mean, do it. It will have to be the first episode. But
okay.
We're not going to get a
I'm
fair
not watching
reflection.
20 episodes. I can pretty much guarantee
you have
that.
To watch. You're going to tie you up in a basement
two.
Cellar and force you to watch 20 episodes.
Huh? I want you to watch more than one.
Have you ever watched an episode of Bake Off?
Yes, I have watched an episode of Bake Off.
Oh, Pottery Throwdown. That was the
I've
other
never
one
watched
the other
Pottery Throwdown.
Okay. tempted to. But I mean, it's up to you.
You can. Right. By the end of this episode, I will have decided. And by that, I will have consulted with Boyd and we will have thought of the best episode for you to watch.
Also, I should probably clarify, when I say I've watched an episode of Bake Off, I guess what I mean is I've been in the room when an episode of Bake Off has been on.
Okay.
Watching it might be a generous description of what I was doing.
In that case, we should consider that. Yeah.
All right. Right. All right. Well,
anyway, enough of this.
Enough of this. Enough of this frippery.
Yeah.
This is the business of Pilot Plus. Let's talk instead about what we've been watching. And I want to tell you something, and it's not something I've been watching, but it's something that I could have watched because I went onto Netflix and the algorithm.
Wait, is this a new section? Yes. Things I could have watched.
Things I could have watched.
Ridiculous human being.
So you know how like Netflix, when it goes onto its screensaver, it just pulls up shows it thinks you'll like or things it thinks you'll like. It came up with something that its algorithm clearly had gazed into the bottomless pits of my psyche to work out what would most appeal to me.
And it came
up and it came up with a film called Viking Wolf.
Oh my God.
I was just like, do you know what? That probably does tap into pretty much all of my viewing habits.
That's a total you show.
I watch werewolf things, I watch Viking shows, therefore what would I absolutely love? Viking Wolf, which is a film. I don't know what it's about, but I can only assume it's about a Viking wolf.
Did you actually watch it?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, wow.
But it was interesting that Netflix...
Remember, this is the section that James might have watched.
So I didn't watch that.
Did you actually watch anything?
I did. I watched a bunch of things. I'm going to tell you what they are. Oh. I finished Extraordinary. I only had one episode to go, but I've seen the final episode of Extraordinary, which I really, really enjoyed. It was loads of fun. Mm-hmm. I also finished Lockwood and Co. And we, Boydie, are going to try next week and do a Lockwood and Co. spoiler special for Pilot Plus. That should be quite fun. And also the Last of Us. Oh. Obviously, The Last of Us has been going on. Boys looking for you, The Last of Us.
Well, I know you've watched it already.
I also have. But,
so you're rewatching them.
Yeah, so we're up to episode 6 of The Last of Us now. But the reason why I was rewatching them, Boyd, the reason why was because I may or may not have done a very, very, very long, very, very in-depth interview with the showrunners of The Last of Us for our Last of Us end of season spoiler special.
So, that is exciting.
Yes, that is quite exciting.
Haven't you already chatted to them for another?
I have. They can't get rid of me. In fact,
they must. So they must consider you to be their stalker now.
No, but this is literally. So this is 100% true. When I started the interview, I went. I said to them, "I said it's me again. You can't get rid of me." And Craig Mason just looked at the camera and went, "Yeah, like a cordyceps outbreak." So that's absolutely true.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely true. I am their mushroom fungus killer thing.
You really are.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I watched that too. And then the other thing I watched this week.
Is it true? I have a quick question about that. Is it true they banned the word zombie from the set?
Oh, I don't know.
The one question he didn't ask.
Well, they are infected. They're not zombies.
I know. Of course. Yeah. But, so I read a story somewhere. Of course, it'd be good if I actually made note of wherever the hell I did read it. But probably just someone on Twitter said, apparently the rumor was they banned the use of the word. People didn't, that we need 11 zombies right now. No, we need 11 people
infected with ceratops
or whatever it is.
Cordyceps.
Yeah, it seems a bit ridiculous to me because obviously they are zombies.
They did that on 28 Days Later as well. Like, it's like, they're not zombies, they're infected.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. So yes, saw that, but I also watched the first episode of For All Mankind. So I have begun my For All Mankind journey.
That is exciting.
To be fair, I have seen this episode before because obviously I watched it when it very first aired, though I couldn't remember any of it. I will say the beginning of it with the moon landing is extremely well done and I'd completely forgotten it. So the impact of that was still very much intact. The rest of the episode, I was very conscious it's good. I'm enjoying it. It has not seized me yet.
Well, famously, it only really seizes about halfway through season one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but I'm going to press on with it. Like, but it's enough. It's good enough that I'm prepared to keep watching it. And I'm waiting to be seized.
Good.
But I have yet to be seized.
It will seize you.
Okay.
Mankind will seize you eventually.
Let's hope. But, for all the people who are endlessly bemoaning the fact that I don't watch For All Mankind and that I will love For All Mankind, I am now watching this show For All Mankind. So,
that's our listeners, the endless bemoaners.
That's right.
As they like to be known.
Yes, that is it. All right, so fine. Well, what have you been watching then, Boyd?
I have been watching the same thing that I was watching last week. Can you remember? How closely do you listen? I mean, this is a test.
Not that closely.
No, exactly. I mean, James, forget about it.
No. Give me a clue.
Why I watched last week was, it will give it away.
Oh, instantly. I know.
Oh, yeah.
You were watching the Eugene Levy show.
Oh, no. I mean, I was. That was one of the things.
Okay, well,
yeah,
I mean, I haven't.
I mean, she gave you the correct answer. It's not her fault that you chose one thing.
Okay. The answer is it was the first half. I finished the first half of this series last
You!
Yes.
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 You!
Yes.
You!
You.
You.
Well done.
You.
Well done. Well done.
It's you. So I watched the first, I finished the first five episodes. It's airing in two chunks.
Yes.
So, but all, the whole of the first chunk is there now on Netflix, but they sent me the second chunk.
Yes.
Oh my.
I have heard, I've heard things about
what?
This. And I'm wondering whether we need to, all of us, plow through this in short order so we can do a spoiler special.
We've got to do a spoiler special.
Okay.
It's ripe for a spoiler special.
All right. I'm going to do it.
It's so demented. The twists
really
are so wacko that we have to discuss it. It has to be discussed. It's absolute classic spoiler special material.
Okay.
So I'm afraid, Kate, you have to watch
all the
other. No, I don't mind it.
But it's, I mean, it is massive good fun all the way through, obviously.
How many eps?
Well, there's 10 in all.
Yeah.
How many of you, what did you watch for the review?
One.
Then you've got nine to go.
Nine to go.
Next on Pilot TV's Elementary Maths.
Maybe what
I wasn't
do
sure how long the run was.
I suggested this on the WhatsApp.
I was like hoping for a six up.
I did suggest this on the WhatsApp. I'm sure you remember. I said we should do you as a spoiler special and we do it in the first half first. So that gives you four more episodes.
Yes.
Oh, I see. So we do them in two chunks. We do like a part one spoiler chunk.
Because the second chunk doesn't arrive until March the 5th or whatever.
Oh, so we got a bit of time. Okay, let's do that. Okay, let's do it. So if we can get through the first half of this by next week, then we can do one of those next week. Okay, let's aim to do that. That's a good plan.
Yeah, so completely phenomenally demented, that show. The only other thing really that I watched was I went to, even though I've had time off this week from the helter-skelter world of my job, I actually went to the launch of Queen Charlotte, a Bridgerton story.
You went to it?
Yeah, I went
Did
to
you
it.
Get the afternoon tea?
I got the afternoon tea. Well, no, it's not. No, it was nibbles. They had Claridge's canapes and cocktails. And I'm not drinking at the moment, so I had a non-alcoholic cocktail. The blood pressure.
Blood pressure gate.
Remember the blood pressure.
But the canapes were fine, right?
Well, I actually, do you know what? I actually did not go full on with the canapes. I'm trying to stay
healthy. Boy, he's taking it seriously.
Yeah, I'm taking it seriously. Mm. But it was an odd event. I'm not delighted to be invited by the Netflix. But what it was, essentially, was a launch of the trailer. So they had the trailer right at the end, but they had like two Q&As, quite extensive Q&As before the trailer.
Was Shonda there?
Shonda was there live by satellite to her on Zoom, basically. Yeah, to her office or whatever on Zoom. But what was quite funny slash unfortunate was she had a chat first with the person hosting the Q&A, which was fine. And then she just sat there like gazing into space while the next two quite long, as I say, Q&As were played out with the new cast members. Because what Queen Charlotte is they're going to have this, like, the backstory when Queen Charlotte
it's origin story.
Of Queen Charlotte and various characters. So they showed clips, they then talked about it, and all the way through, Shonda was on the screen. They were looking. I was obsessed with her. I was just like, what's Shonda doing? She's just like
zoned out,
like looking. And then when they went back to her right at the end, the sound wasn't working. It was very unfortunate.
Oh, no.
They fixed it. But it was really interesting. And someone told me that this is going to be a slight return to raunch. Do you remember my issue with season two?
Was it PG-13?
Yeah, which you did prefer.
I preferred season
Ludicrous.
Two.
Did you?
Yeah.
You're the one.
She's the one. Kay's the one.
Wow.
Exactly. But apparently, you could tell from the clips they showed and from the trailer itself, which is now out there generally, that they're definitely not going to. Yeah, there's going to be some raunch among the young versions of the characters that are very interesting anyway on Bridgerton. So yeah, and they revealed that. And this is more news. Now this has crossed over into news now. Apologies, but it's launching on May the 4th. Is when Queen Charlotte.
Can't wait.
A Bridgerton story will be unveiled to the world itself. And that is what I've been watching.
Nice wrap up.
Yeah.
I've been watching. Right, so I was trying to hastily just check who messaged us this on Twitter, but one of our lovely pod squads asked us if we were watching Alaska Daily.
Was it? That's right.
Yeah. Andy? I'm going to say Andy.
I mean...
Yeah, Andy. Sounds about right. It's either Alan,
name.
Andy,
it's as good
or
a name
Adam.
As any.
No, it began with A. No, I'm sure it's Andy.
Sure?
Anyway, yeah, he said, asked us if we were watching Alaska Daily. And so I took up his recommendation because two episodes dropped and he said it had a little fanfare, but it was quite good. And actually, I really enjoyed it. So Hilary Swank plays a New York reporter who moves to Alaska having landed a big scoop in New York and which... landed her in hot water. So she's kind of she's pissed off about that. She's fed up. She's going to write a book about the story that she had reported on. But then she gets asked to come and join this local newspaper in Alaska and she takes on the role. So it's fish out of water. Do you know who's in it? Cyrus from Scandal. Is that his name, Cyrus? Do you remember him?
From Shondaland Scandal.
Yes. I've forgotten his name. Anyone who watched Scandal will recognise him.
I know exactly who you mean. Sorry, because he's in loads of stuff.
Yeah, but
he's one of those character actors who you know, oh, it's him, but I don't know what the actor's name is.
Well, he's in it. He's the one who lures her over to Alaska. And I've really enjoyed it, but I was frustrated because there was only two episodes to watch. So now I wouldn't... Do you know when the whole thing will be dropping, or is they doing it in a... Boydo, I'm looking at you.
Well, wait a minute. You're saying how many episodes are there at the moment?
Two.
Oh, I think we're clearly weekly. Clearly they're doing week by week, aren't they? I mean, yeah. But enjoying it, though.
Yeah, actually, that is clear. It was a weekly thing.
I mean, that's almost as stupid
as James's. It's a given, yeah.
How long is an hour?
but yeah, anyway, so I'm desperate to see the rest. At first, I wasn't convinced by Hilary Swank in that role, but she's grown, you know, she's more convincing now. Right, two things I just quickly need to tell you about. Which are kind of illegal territory, I think, for the podcast. But I'm going to mention them anyway, James, very quickly.
We're getting sued. Did you say legal territory?
Illegal territory.
Oh. Yeah.
As
she
in, mean, I'm not
she means it's going to be reality shit.
Reality TV,
yeah.
Not well, it is reality shit. But
thank
as in,
you.
Stuff I've watched for work, which I just, it's like just a bit of a public service announcement.
There is a loophole here whereby if I ask you what you're watching and this is what you've been watching, there's kind of no way I can reasonably...
Exactly. In your face.
Don't shut you before.
No, that's true.
Right, The Challenge UK, Channel 5 and also Paramount Plus. It's mad. It's really, really mad. It's reality stars competing against each other to win £100,000, but doing like really crazy shit. Okay, so for example, in the first episode, two reality stars are grappling with each other above the sea on a plank, and they have to push each other off first, and whoever does that wins that competition. It results in someone having double fractured eye sockets.
That doesn't sound
it's
like...
brutal. It's like Celebrity Hunger Games. It's mad. It's crazy.
How do you fracture your eye sockets by falling in the sea?
Well, landing really hard on the water. Yeah.
How high over the water are they?
Really high.
Like, how high?
I don't know. Look, what we'll do is we'll try it out with you in a swimming pool.
Have you said what this show is called, by the way?
Yeah, The Challenge UK.
Oh, is that what it's called? The Challenge UK? Oh,
yeah.
Okay, fine. Because it's a channel called Challenge, isn't it? So, you know.
The Challenge UK. Okay. And it's like a franchise, which is very popular, I think, in America. And then, So anyway, I just wanted to tell everyone that if you want some crazy shit, get
on to
that.
Thing about this show, though, the most shocking thing about this show, because I've read about it, is that... These are all like former reality stars taking part. Like, isn't Joey Essex in it? Or
No. James Locke and
James Locke from Made in Chelsea. I know this won't mean anything to you. What I'm saying is, these are celebrities, effectively created by the reality TV world, and they're competing for money for themselves, like not for charity, like most
just
of them.
For themselves.
Yeah, just for themselves.
But I personally think that's a good thing. No, because they need that for physiotherapy, medical attention.
Yeah.
It's not enough money, frankly, for what they endure.
Yeah. Equally though, it's if grueling. You're going to watch reality TV stars have their eye sockets fractured, that's sounds like actually decent TV.
Yeah, so. James is now suddenly in.
I'm in for it. Putting reality twats into a Hunger Games situation, I'm actually on board.
Maybe
for
this
that,
is
so.
The thing we should get him to watch. Yeah. Anyway, and the last thing is The Dangerous Rise of Andrew Tate, which is a documentary, which was made by Vice and that the BBC acquired. And it's really, really interesting. The reporter, I need to give him a little, Matt Shear, is it? Vice reporter. He's really good at just getting underneath the skin of Andrew Tate. And actually, he's unflappable because Andrew Tate, so he goes and spends time with him in Romania and then is forced by Andrew Tate to do some sort of like cage fighting thing to prove his masculinity. It's all toxic and awful, but does a good job of once again just highlighting watermelon and twat, horrendous
time,
twat. Pre-jail, yeah, of course. But that's on iPlayer. Should anyone want to watch?
That is interesting.
That was what we've been watching, and time now for this week's first guest. Hello Tomorrow is streaming now on Apple TV Plus, which Pilot Plus subscribers will already know as we reviewed it there last week. This is a retro future tale that stars Billy Crudup as a salesman hawking timeshares on the moon to people feeling lost in their lives, only for really his own life to unexpectedly catch up with him after the family he abandoned two decades earlier brings him rapidly down to earth. Amon Warman got on the first rocket to Tranquility Base to catch up with Billy Crudup there.
We're delighted to be joined on the Pilot TV podcast by the star of Hello Tomorrow, Mr. Billy Crudup. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely, absolutely. Congratulations on this show. I'm very, very into it. I've watched a few episodes. I cannot wait to finish it. One of the first things that jumped out at me is this retro-futuristic world the show is taking place in. As you were reading the script for the first time, what were you imagining and how did that match up with the reality when you first stepped onto set?
Let me tell you, they were so shrewd, these writers, Amit and Lucas, about describing extremely articulately every detail that was in the let's say that remember that nacho strip at the baseball game, or the popcorn that is a bottomless popcorn, a bucket of popcorn. Every single thing was written to a T. So when we got on set, it was actually exactly as you would imagine. And like all the products at Eight, didn't work nearly as well as one had hoped. And I always think of that there's a robot at the very beginning that delivers a beer out of its stomach. And Amit used to make a joke. He said, but you understand, Billy, there's probably a little bit of motor oil in there. The way that they had imagined this was so well rendered on the page that walking onto the set was seeing their reality come to life. So there were times, you know, the production design was so gorgeously rendered between the sets and the costumes and the music and the cinematography, and that there were times that you were overwhelmed by being in an alternate reality. There was a beautiful screen behind the Vista Lodge that was so detailed, but it was just an illustration. But it was a parking lot filled with hover cars, and you know, we're in a sound stage, but you're looking at a lighted parking lot filled with hover cars, and it's impossible not to feel like you're in that environment. And it is both a 1950s style motor lodge, and it is the future. So it's a really, as you know, an actor, we relish the imaginative process. And so when you get an opportunity to be fully immersed like that, your imagination goes wild. So it was exceptional, that experience.
Your character, Jack Billings, is a salesman, just like your father was, I believe. Did playing that character stir up any old memories for you?
Oh, did it ever. And in fact, both of my brothers have seen a couple episodes and they were like, geez, you weren't doing an impression of dad, you were doing dad. I mean, that was, it, in fact, quite hard for them to watch, because, you know, as Jack is trying to navigate his environment, there are some cracks in the armor. And that was one thing our dad never allowed for. There were never any cracks in the armor. It was always optimism, optimism, optimism. He might have saved the cracks for his friends or somebody else, but it was not for his boys. And the notion that tomorrow offered an opportunity that was different than today, that today might be so unpleasant or so disheartening or so burdensome that you might not be able to handle being present in today, was a feature of my dad. And I read this in Jack through and through. And speaking to Amit and Lucas, they shared the same point of view. So it was a really wonderful meeting of the minds between us all. And probably one of the primary reasons why I identified with it when I read it.
If Jack Billings met your father, how do you think that conversation would go?
They'd have the night of their lives. The two of them would have already, like, the stories they would have told of the event, the wild successes that they had and the inventions that they made, they would have been inseparable. My dad had a love of people, and he was curious about every new person he would encounter. And he loved being thrown a curveball. He was delighted when somebody had something new to discover about them, or that he didn't predict correctly the way that somebody would behave or what they thought. He loved trying to read the room. So the notion of two very curious and loving and affable people spending an evening together talking about their achievements, especially when their achievements can be imaginative and creative, I can imagine a delightful night. The bar bot would have run out of beer.
Oh, I would like to be a fly on the wall in that conversation.
Yeah, me too. Well, I have been. It's not so great the next morning.
One of the things that I've heard you talk about is that in some ways, you feel like you're a character actor trapped in a leading man's body. Here you get to be both. Was that also part of the appeal of doing the show?
You know, I hadn't thought about it in that way, but it is it's a great point. Jack really is a leading man in his own life. You know, he sees himself, even though it's a team of traveling salesmen that does maybe middle market, lower middle market. They're not going to Chicago and New York and Paris and London and Sydney and Tokyo. They're you know, keeping it low key in the small towns throughout the Midwest. And even still inside that, Jack sees himself as a heroic person. And yet he has all of these incredible features to him that are, and to your point, truly original character. And so I guess having the opportunity to do both remarkable and novel. It doesn't always happen that way. You rarely get a protagonist that is as complex as what Amit and Lucas have created in Jack.
And one of the many things I love about the show, and you kind of touched on it earlier, is it gets at that human desire for another thing that will make our lives better, whether it's a new blender or a games console, or in this case, the moon. Is this the type of show that makes you think about your own life and the way you approach those things differently in any way?
I certainly hope so. I had that experience. And again and again, I kept reflecting on this idea that you spend so much energy imagining a better tomorrow, you forget about today. And really, today is all we have. Our conversation that we're having right now is all we have. And really investing in that moment, making yourself present for whatever that event is, it is the act of living. And that can be a joyful and incredible thing. And when you live in a country that the premise of the country is based upon possibilities in the future. And it's hard to feel comfortable, like you've achieved something being in the present. So there's this great conflict of how do we get into this wonderful future new life that we're living now? I mean, we do have cars that drive themselves. This happens, and maybe they don't do it well, but we have cars. I've got a device that can teleport my face to the other side of the planet instantaneously. And it's not even plugged into anything. This is the future that we're living, even our communication. And yet we will we'll miss it in this notion that, oh, there could be an upgrade coming that's going to really solve all those bugs. I hope that the series is a wonderful and provocative reminder of that.
There are a few times in the show where Jack is trying to sell the idea of a better way and a better life to people in the room. And for me, that can be likened to an audition. So do you have any memorable audition horror or success stories that are coming to mind right now when you think of that?
I've had some absolutely sublime audition experiences. I think because I was taught, or I feel like I learned in acting school, that auditions are not the means to an end. Auditions are the end. So this is your chance for 2 minutes to play the part. And that means when you go in there, you don't have to worry about whether or not people like you or don't like you. You just get to use your ingenuity as a creative artist to play the part once and for all in probably a rather weird environment, an environment much like this one. But that attitude, it led to a moment very early in my career, which I'm exceedingly proud of. That's why I'm sharing it with you now. But there was a play that Tom Stoppard wrote that was an absolutely gorgeous play called Arcadia. And I went and auditioned for it. And the character was this heroic tutor, brilliant tutor, hilarious guy, Septimus Hodge. And I read for it. And the casting director, Daniel Swee, he gave me a note. And I just couldn't make the adjustment in time. And as soon as that door closed behind me, I went, oh, I know what that is. And I called my agent. I said, can I go back in? And of course, I was new. And so my agent was like, listen, I hear this every day. Why don't you just take that note and enjoy and keep working on it, et cetera. So I happily took the note, kept working on it with a friend of mine who was also in school. And lo and behold, a month later, they couldn't find anybody for the part. And he said, okay, do you want to come back in? And I was like, do I want to come back in? I know the whole play now. Are you kidding me? And I came back in. And the next day I got it. Trevor Nunn was directing it. And 5 weeks later, I was on Broadway.
That is incredible.
Isn't that crazy?
I know. That's amazing how things work out.
I had some really great teachers.
With Jack, I feel like when he's finished making a big speech, he sort of can feel it in the room if he's nailed it, if people are thinking about what he's just said, if there's a chance that people are going to follow through. When you're in an audition room like that, can you always tell? Do you have that feeling that you
definitely not? They hold it close to the vest, but you know where you can tell it. I hadn't thought about this quite in the same way. I often think of him as like a preacher. So I think of the audience in the room as a congregation. And if you've been to church before in your life, you know when the pastor has hit it out of the park. There is a sense of hope and belief that was absent the room that has been conjured out of thin air, and all of a sudden everybody leaves uplifted. And you feel that in the theater. I did a play not too long ago where it was just me telling a story. And there were plenty of times where I'm looking dead into the audience with the people, their heads off, dead asleep. And I'm like, I'm not winning the war today. And there are other times where the chemistry of the moment ignites the group of people together. And I'm telling you, at the end of the show, I could have sold them anything, because there's something about the collective response of people in a moment like that, I guess, because we're all social creatures, that is a really valuable and virtuous asset.
At the end of the first episode, Jack takes a character under his wing to teach him a few things about the business. Who was that person for you? And are there any lessons that you learned way back when that you still use today?
Boy, that's a great question, too. Well, there's a friend of mine from college right now has a son who is a young writer and aspiring filmmaker in Los Angeles. And we have met periodically over the last several years. I don't have the same type of confidence that Jack has, that he understands the world in the way that he does. I have a lot of opinions. Clearly, you can hear me talk. It's boring myself at times, but it's mostly a process of listening for me. And hopefully finding things or characteristics in him that I can promote, that perhaps I hadn't thought of before, because he can't lead my life and I can't teach him about how to live his life. I just have to be empathetic to understanding what the ups and downs are like, and maybe gently help him find the aspects of working in this industry that make him feel more uplifted and less defeated. I think that's probably as good a thing as you can do as any kind of mentor. I don't have all the tricks that Jack does. I don't have a smell the cookie speech. That's a very Amit and Lucas have done something magical with that. But I do care profoundly about the future and the young people who are going to be populating it.
Final quick question for you. Watchmen is one of my favorite performances of yours. And I just wanted to ask about your memories of playing that role, and what do you make of how the genre has grown since? And have you watched the Watchmen TV series as well?
I'll give you a perfect example. My younger brother has always been interested in graphic novels. And Keanu Reeves was actually playing that part, and he had dropped out for some reason. And I remember getting a call, my agent telling me about the script, but I hadn't read it. I was not a graphic novel fan. I didn't read it before. And when I read the script, I thought, wait a second, are you subverting the genre? Is that what you're doing with this? Are you trying to say, what are we doing with these myths, you know, that we create in these superheroes? Because if there were actual superheroes or say superhumans, they wouldn't care about humanity. They'd be on Mars thinking about physics, you know, and the actual people who dress up in costumes are probably lunatics. And so I called my younger brother and I said, hey, it seems to me from this script that this is a very subversive kind of graphic novel. Would you agree? He was like, yes, Watchmen is the greatest graphic novel of all time. I said, it's great to hear that, Brooks. What is, I have been offered a part. And he goes, who? I said, Mr. New Yorker or something. He goes, Dr. Manhattan. And I was like, Yeah. And he goes, fuck you. And I was like, okay, this is going to be a good part. I'm going to take that for sure. So that was the crowning achievement between brothers there at the moment. But it was such an extraordinary experience. And to your point, it got at what I think is a wonderful way to view also the success of all of the superhero movies, is that we should continue to talk about the context of why we're even interested in heroes and villains, why we need this medium. And this is a centuries old, millennial old study. We've had gods and monsters since the time we could tell stories. I think continuing to reflect upon why we need those stories for ourselves is as interesting as the stories themselves.
Billy, I could talk to you all day, but I've got to let you go. Congratulations on the show again. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
That was Billy Crudup. And now we have a listener question. And let's find out what this week's listener question is. He says, playing for time while I try to find it.
Not the system, the triage system.
Here we are. Here we are. Here is my triaged question. This week's question comes from Stefan Smith. And Stefan says, while retweeting Josh Molina, because he's a bit of a wag here, he says, on an unrelated topic, what character / actor joined the cast and ruined a TV show you loved? See, what he's doing there is he's saying that when Josh Molina came in as Will Bailey in The West Wing, replacing Rob Lowe, Sam Seaborn, he ruined the show, which is a bit harsh, actually.
He was being self-deprecating.
Well, no, because this is not Josh Molina saying it.
Yeah, this is
Stefan Smith saying it.
Oh, okay.
I think that's way harsh.
Although, to be fair, Josh Molina does often say, hi, I'm Josh Molina, I ruined the West
Wing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he does. Sorry, I thought that's what you meant.
But, yes, so I,
such
you know,
a tortured length.
Indeed. Sorry. But Josh Molina, I like Bill Bailey.
No, you're getting trolled by Boyd. I like this.
Yeah. I said Bill Bailey. I said, I like Bill Bailey. I love Bill Bailey. Bill Bailey's
Will
great.
Bailey.
Bill Bailey in the West Wing would have been extraordinary.
Yeah, Bill Bailey.
Yeah, Bill Will Bailey. Yes, no, Will Bailey, I actually like in the West Wing. I think if you were going to pick someone who was terrible in the West Wing, you'd probably pick Mandy, but you couldn't because she was in the first episode and she actually begins it. She's in the whole first season and then she never comes back. So she's the worst character. But no, Will Bailey is fine. But let's bring this kicking and screaming back to topic. This is about characters who have been introduced into a show during its runtime and have either ruined it or come close to ruining it.
Yes. I'm going to do okay. I have to give you one answer.
Oh, good. Value for money right here.
No, maybe two. One, maybe two. All right. Because I found this quite hard, this one, because... Yeah, it's hard.
Me
one,
too.
I mean, James has clearly got listed about 50.
Oh God.
On the way.
Okay, fine.
So-and-so from The Expanse is going on. But the answer to the question is in Frasier. It's always Frasier. In Frasier, Daphne's brother Simon came in when all of her brothers kind of arrived at one point, but before all the rest of the brothers arrived. Like one of them was played by Robbie Coltrane, who you couldn't understand a word he was saying before he arrived. Anthony LaPaglia, Australian actor, Anthony LaPaglia, who's been in many a film and a TV show, who's a perfectly good actor. He arrives, cast mystifyingly as Simon, her brother. Daphne, you remember, is from Manchester.
I do remember Northern, this, yes.
You know, Jane Leaves has a very good is Northern accent. Mystifyingly, Anthony LaPaglia decided to portray Simon as a Cockney. And he talks like that to her, all that Daphne, he calls her, and he literally talks like this, and it's unbearable. And he's in it quite a lot, from leading up to the wedding, to the Niles-Daphne wedding, which he arrives for, and even beyond, and he kind of drops in every now and then. So, and his accent is absolutely diabolical, one of the worst accents you've ever heard on TV anyway. If we do worst accents, we might have done that before, I can't remember. But he is a terrible, awful, cretinous creation. And he's supposed to be annoying, and he's really, really annoying to the point where you can't stand him. As soon as he walks in, he's like, oh no, Anthony LaPaglia doing that character. So he is my absolute peak answer to this question. I'd also throw in that Will in Westworld. Was he in it from the beginning, do you remember? I meant to check, and I couldn't. I'm the British guy in Westworld.
I think he is. Yeah.
Okay. In that case, that's not.
Did he annoy you? You didn't.
He's really annoying.
Yeah. Okay.
He's really annoying.
Fair enough.
Questionable, I would say, acting skill as well. Mm. I mean, I'm sure he's a very perfectly good actor, but his performance in Westworld was not the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Kay will, of course, say that when Jadzia Dax left Deep Space Nine and was replaced by Ezri Dax by Nicole LaBeouf, that was an unfortunate turn for the final season. And I have to agree, because she lacked the depth and character texture that Jadzia had.
You're so happy now, aren't you? Look yeah. at him. He's a smug face. Look. Yeah. So delighted. Okay, so I'm going to be honest. I did try and think of an answer for this one. And I really did spend time thinking. I couldn't think of anything. So I've just changed the question.
Oh, okay. Fine. I didn't realise that was an option.
To something that was just brilliant. Easier for me to answer. And I'm choosing Kenneth Branagh as Poirot, which goes back to a TV show. So,
hang on. What's happening?
Yes. So David Suchet.
Yes.
In Poirot. As a TV show. Right. He's the only Poirot. Uh-huh. And then Kenneth Branagh took on that mantle.
What about John Malkovich?
Not into him either.
But not only have you changed the question, yeah. you've actually changed it to a question yeah. about a film.
To a film. Yeah. Whereas Malkovich at least would have been a TV show.
Yeah. No. I've specifically got something against Kenneth Branagh's Poirot. Okay. Yeah.
Is it because his moustache has multiple strands?
Was ridiculous. Mm. And he did a lot of things that Poirot wouldn't do. But anyway, this is a separate Poirot pod.
I can confirm, having worked with Kay, throughout the period where Kenneth Branagh's remakes of Murder on the Orient Express and Death on the Nile. He's got another one coming, isn't he? I think Evil Under the Sun, they're doing next. Anyway, I can confirm that Kay is obsessed with how unkempt Ken Branagh's version of Poirot was.
Yeah.
To the point also, of like, he would outrage.
Run. Yeah. He would run. I mean, Poirot never would run.
What?
Poirot would never run.
Why not?
He didn't do that. I mean, that was uncouth. No. Yeah. Anyway, let's not get into it, but that's my answer.
She was furious. Yeah,
that's my answer to a question you didn't ask.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is.
It really is. I mean, what is that question even? Who's your least favourite incarnation of a TK character who ends up in a film?
Well, Kenneth Branagh almost ruined the character of Poirot for me.
I see. So it's kind of thematically related
loosely
to the question.
Loosely related.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
Anyway, that's me done.
Okay, good. What about Emily when she joins Friends? How about that?
Oh, God, yeah, that's a brilliant answer.
There you go.
Yeah, that's good.
Because she was dreadful.
Terrible.
Dreadful.
Yeah. Wasn't a big fan of that. Naranti and Sokozu, when they joined Farscape, that was a dark day.
Here we go.
That was horrendous.
Didn't like that at all when we went into to season four of Farscape. I mean, okay, here's a controversial one. Yeah. Did Kirstie Alley ruin Cheers?
No, absolutely not. That's not even up for debate.
She's no Diane, let's be honest.
But no, they did a brilliant... Considering Diane left, considering, you know, she left of her own free will... They did a brilliant job replacing her with a very funny, memorable character. She's a brilliant comedy actress.
But don't they bring in? They bring in really good supporting characters for that era of the show as well.
But Cheers was still brilliant because she did not ruin it.
You're right with Emily from Friends, though. So
yeah, Emily from Friends.
All right. What about if Terry were here, she'd back me up on this. When Dawn joins Buffy, that is awful. She's a terrible character and utterly ruins it.
Mm. Right,
I haven't seen Buffy.
She's awful. But also, she's not like she's like a magical sister that just kind of parachutes into Buffy's life. Like she's some kind of supernatural. She's a key. It's a whole thing. Don't worry about it. But she ruins it. She's terrible. A couple of other ones. Actually, who was the one who replaced Marissa on the OC? Remember when Marissa dies? Spoiler. And one of the other ones. Is it Taylor? Is that
Taylor Townsend.
Is it Taylor?
Yeah.
She's dreadful.
I didn't hate her. I think she was all right.
You think?
Yeah. She fit a you know, she was there for a reason. And that's why.
All right. Here's one which I definitely stand by. Christine Kachansky. Red Dwarf.
Red Dwarf. You stand alone in watching Red Dwarf.
No. Red Dwarf seasons 1-6, all-time classic. And then the second where they get reunited with the ship and when Christine Kachansky also joins the crew, it just went horribly off a cliff. There's a latter-day revival for Red Dwarf, which I can't remember the season. I want to say, is it 10? I think it has a little bit of a revival with 10. Well, actually, Red Dwarf got good again when it came back after a break. But
I thought that was 9.
1-6 is the golden era. And I'm pretty sure it's not 9K. I'm pretty sure it was Red Dwarf X. But yeah, Christine Kachansky. No, because also the thing with Red Dwarf, like part of it was that they were all guys in space and there were no women. That was part of the sort of frustration of the show. That there were no women left. The whole human race was extinct and Lister was the last human being alive. There were no women. And that's part of the setup of the show.
Let's just say they knew what they were doing when they created a show of appeal to nerds, didn't they?
Relatable.
That is fair. That is fair. I'm just saying, when sexual frustration is underpinning a lot of the comedy, to then bring in the object of his desire, the woman that he loves more than anything else, I don't think that was a particularly great move.
No.
But also, that was the mark of the downslide in Red Dwarf quality. Anyway, that is, I guess, kind of a question. And those were at least two of them, vaguely answers. If you wish to have your question read out on the Pilot TV postbag, do send us your questions. Do send us your thoughts. Do send us your feedback. Do send us your musings. And I'll either get read out here on the main show or on Pilot TV Plus on our extended postbag. But do send them to us via DM on Twitter at Pilot TV Pod or on Instagram at Pilot TV Pod or direct to me on Instagram at James C. Dyer. Shall we have some news? Should we talk about what's been happening in the world of TV news? And Boydie,
yes.
What have you got for us?
Well, do you remember a couple of weeks ago I said that stories would come out, talking of Frasier, it's all about Frasier, the reboot, you know, because they started filming it and they filmed it for a live studio audience in classic multi-camera sitcom style, that news would come out from people who got to see these recordings of what it's like. And a lot of people have sent me messages on Twitter saying it was really good.
They were there. Yeah. They were in the audience. People, they've seen Frasier.
Yeah, people in the audience have seen Frasier. And not only that, but they specifically said that Nicky Lyndhurst, as I'm calling him, was really good.
This is the best news.
Yeah. So I'm now like, okay, you know, now let's just bear in mind that if you've got to see a studio recording of an iconic show that's coming back that's very, very newsworthy and exciting, I'd be thrilled if I got to see a studio recording of Frasier.
Why weren't you invited to a studio recording?
They're filming in LA, but I mean, that should have flown you out. You're right. They could have flown you out. Right. So I would be skewed. I find it hard to be, you know, objective, but I'm not. But a lot of people, I haven't seen one negative reaction. Put it that way. And someone messaged me saying, do you want, you know, could spoil it for you in telling who what kind of character Nicholas Lyndhurst is playing? And, you know, and I was like, no, I'd rather not have that spoiled. So I don't know what the details are, but apparently it's a very clever kind of premise.
Did they hint at any returning characters?
Mostly, I think someone said, not that anyone's seen this yet, because it's early days filming the first few episodes, but I think everyone's assuming that Lilith will be the character to come back, of if any. Talking of characters that didn't ruin sitcoms when Liv arrived with Frasier, and she was an instantly brilliant character who then popped up in various special episodes of Frasier as well. So I think everyone's thinking she probably will come back. BB Newirth, who plays Lilith. So I was excited about that Frasier news. Yeah, it's good news.
It is good news. Also in good sitcom news, Ted Lasso is parachuting onto the airwaves on the 15th of March, which is quite soon. Like, it's a mere month away.
Yeah, fucking soon.
It is. Yeah. Boy, swearing he's so excited. So
have you checked your Apple TV screeners yet to see if it's there?
I haven't.
I have.
Is it there?
No. Is it? No. Right, okay.
Not as of about half an hour ago.
Well, see, I deliberately didn't check because I have so much to watch at the moment with For All Mankind and obviously you as well.
And
Traitors.
More importantly.
That I don't have the bandwidth for that. I mean, it's not like when C suddenly cropped up and I was like, hold everything. Thing no. It's time to watch
or
C.
When you managed to watch all of The Last of Us and Picard and something
Carnival
else
Row.
Carnival Row Carnival
all Row. 10 hours of Carnival Row.
I mean, Ted Lasso is only even half an hour an episode, so I will, as soon as it arrives, I'm
I mean
on it,
you
I'm
say that it started out as half an hour an episode. Season 2 was basically 40 minute dramas.
As James calls it, an hour.
40 minute hour. That was a 40 minute hour. Good stuff. So yes, Ted Lasso has a date. The Peripheral, Amazon's The Peripheral, has been renewed for its second season, which I'm very pleased about. Yeah. So I will get to find out what happened there. I can tell by Kay's face that she is equally excited.
Sorry,
do you know what else has been renewed?
Yes.
Poker Face.
Yes, the show we still haven't watched.
The show we still can't see.
Know where it's going to be on.
Yeah. Poker Face has been renewed.
Just stop renewing it. Just give us a chance to watch
it. Don't renew it. UK. Let us see it. Yeah, that's what we want. Poker Face. Did either of you watch, I don't even know why I even addressed these things, okay, of course you didn't. Did either of you watch Spartacus Blood and Sand?
Oh my God.
Yes, of course.
How is that even a question?
Yes, Spartacus Blood and Sand.
Famous spot for its rampant nudity.
Yeah.
And,
it was
scenes.
Boobtacular. Yeah. It really was. Yeah.
Urge you never to use that.
Boob and nobtacular, to be fair.
It was. It was like the peen count was quite high.
Yeah, it was. Mm. Yeah. Did you see, talking of it, I've just interrupted your story. In fact, I should have mentioned this during my What Have You Been Watching thing about you. Did you see that Penn Badgley has talked about how he refused to do nude scenes? Basically, he said he refused to do intimacy scenes.
Do you know what the reason is?
Well, yeah, but a weird reason that he
wants to stay faithful to his wife.
Hang on.
That's weird.
Assume, just for the sake of argument, that I wasn't listening to the beginning of that.
Yeah.
What? Ken Badgley, funnily enough, won't do sex scenes.
Yes.
Because his wife wouldn't like it.
No.
No.
No, she doesn't.
That would make maybe
mind.
A little bit more sense.
It's him who, basically, and
he's gone full Mike Pence.
He's got a bit Mike Pence. Basically, he's decided that from now on in his life, and it's not just in you, it's generally, he feels that kissing and sex scenes and nudity is all too much for him. But the reason he uses, Kay says, and he said this on his, you know, he's got his own podcast, by the way. Yeah, he's got his own podcast with co-hosted by two other women, where they talk about kind of teen experiences, but suddenly they decide to do a You special episode about you. I mean, fine. But he basically says that, yeah, he wants to, fidelity is the most important thing to him, and anything like implying that anything he's getting up to would be infidelity in acting.
I mean, I think you need to
weird. It's weird.
Understand the concept
you have to
of
listen
acting.
To it. Yeah,
yeah.
It is, but
it's
you know
his
what?
Prerogative. But doing a show like You, yeah. which is so sexy of, and like
exactly,
you know, kit
exactly.
off. So,
but what's funny is when you know that, because I armed with that knowledge, I read that story yesterday, and then I started watching more of You, and that once you realise that he's stopped doing intimacy, you really notice it, and it's suddenly all cut to when he is shagging a certain character, for example, which he is doing in the show. No spoilers. We'll talk about it in our spoiler special.
We will.
We'll talk about this whole thing. So I'll shut up about it in a minute. But it is amazing. He keeps all his clothes on. He's literally he keeps his tie on. His trousers
a
and tie. He's shagging this
I
woman.
Think, listen,
it's
Pen, if you're listening, I think you can remove your tie. It's yeah. fine. That won't lead to anything.
You can leave your hat on.
Yeah.
But you need to take your tie
you
off.
Take yeah. your tie off. Yeah. So yeah, it's a whole thing. And that expands out. We'll talk about it. Maybe we'll talk about it in a future episode, maybe during the You Spoiler Special one. But there's a whole thing at the moment. You've seen like of people saying there should be less sex and nudity in films and TV.
Is this just Kay? Is this Kay off the base of Bridgerton season 2? Kay's decided we need to apply that ethos to everything.
No, because we're going to come to something that I thought was very well done. But
yeah, there's a raunchy show in today.
Oh, that's right.
You're saying that, but yeah, there were so many complaints.
Well, that's
about
my point.
You know, so
people are saying that. We've interrupted James's new story.
It's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine.
But to wrap it up quickly is, I think my feeling is it's a moronic thing to, first of all, to say that there is significantly less sex and nudity on TV anyway, because I mean Euphoria and Bridgerton, and in fact the show we'll get to later, no spoilers, rest upon
also
sex
when,
and nudity depictions of thereof. So
but when it's cut out,
bullshit.
Like Bridgerton 2, look, everyone's in uproar. You guys are like furious.
Yeah, because
even it's a
like
show
a,
based
right,
around that.
Exactly.
That's the whole point of the show.
Exactly.
Whereas like, so I think like gratuitous sex stuff, sure. But when a show is about sex, it's fine. So you could argue
Bridgerton is about a family.
Dragging this kicking and screaming back to my original news story, you could argue that Spartacus Blood and Sand didn't need as much fucking as it had.
That was absolutely gratuitous.
It was absolutely gratuitous. Yes. No one needed to see Courtney's knob as much as we did.
Right, but so what is the news story about?
The news story is that Stephen S. DeKnight is bringing Spartacus back. Now, if you remember, we had Spartacus Blood and Sand.
Yep.
Which starred Andy Whitfield as Spartacus. Now, he was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma after the first season wrapped. So for the second season, we got a kind of a prequel spin-off show, which had some of the actors, the same amount of nudity, but not him. And then when we came back for season 3, Spartacus returned. But by that point, tragically, Andy Whitfield had died. So he was recast. And I never watched it after he was recast. So I watched the first 2 seasons and I was like, I don't really want to watch it now with a different actor playing Spartacus. But anyway, a revival / sequel is coming back. Stars' show is returning, presumably with just as many knobs as the previous one. Sorry, Kay. It's going to be cocks akimbo, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Wasn't
I
it on as well?
It.
Wasn't it on? It was on. Was it on Stars?
It was Stars. Yeah,
it was back in the day when Stars
sexy
was
stars.
Known.
Yes, sexy stars.
Yeah. I remember I had a dinner. There was a press dinner once for Stars. And they were absolutely upfront and completely
no pun intended.
Yeah, they were completely proud of their upstanding devotion to sex and nudity.
Well, you know, like Cinemax, which was HBO's porn strand, and my beloved Banshee was on Cinemax, and Banshee's very, very booby.
Oh God, yeah.
Very booby.
Yeah, totally. Mm. Yeah. In the Bridgerton press conference, I was talking about the Queen Charlotte one. They did brilliantly get asked about the sex and nudity content, and they all to a fault. Where, of course, all the such scenes are completely
relevant
vital
to the story.
I don't know in any way gratuitous. I'm like, come on.
Did you say that out loud, though?
Of course not. I muttered underneath my breath.
Yeah, fine.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Any other news?
Yes. Mine, first of all, just is that I've noticed Boyd is wearing tracksuit bottoms.
Are you?
Yes.
This I've is never not seen... such an informal podcast, Boyd.
I've never First seen him all, in trackies before.
I can't believe you're outing my trackie.
No, that's fine. I love a trackie, but I've never seen you in a trackie.
I'll tell you why. Because I've got... It's actually my week off this week. I've got annual leave.
This is off-duty,
and yet you're here. Off-duty is tracksuit bottoms.
Exactly. Yeah. I actually went on a very long walk. Earlier today, as part of my new health regime.
Health kick.
20,000 plus hell. Steps. And I thought, what track is for it? Yeah. And you know, and I thought, well, I can't be bothered to change.
Well, what trainers did you wear for it?
Oh, I'm not the one. These, yeah, I wore.
He wore his like Crocs.
No, what are they? Boy, tell us the exact model of your trainers.
Air Jordans.
Air Jordans. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Vintage in some fashion?
Not particularly. No,
okay.
Air Jordans. Yeah. Is that your news story? Was that I'm wearing trackies?
No, it was an observation. I thought, this is breaking news and it's a good look for you. So the news.
I'm going for the Ricky Gervais. When you hit a certain age, you don't want it. You want all of everything you wear would be elasticated.
Okay. My actual news is HBO have cancelled Avenue 5. Did anyone watch that?
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
I think that's sad.
It's a shame. It was funny.
So, you say that, but we reviewed the first episode of that, and I remember we were quite cool on Avenue 5.
Okay, well, it's because of you then.
Maybe it may be specifically my fault.
It's been cancelled, but so after two seasons, it won't be coming back. However, in better news, about a month after Netflix has cancelled Uncoupled, which, as you remember, is the comedy series starring Neil Patrick Harris, Showtime have picked it up for its second season. So,
do you want to hear a Neil Patrick Harris fact?
Tell me.
Yeah. My nickname at school was Doogie Howser because
brilliant.
Someone once said I looked like Neil Patrick Harris, which I absolutely do not, but it stuck because
we'll need to see photos.
School.
That's great.
Of you at that there time.
I can absolutely see that, yeah.
And the last thing I wanted to tell you about is that the BBC has commissioned Grenfell, a three-part drama about the devastating 2017 fire, and apparently it draws on 5 years worth of research, including public sources and inquiry hearings, and it's going to be told from multiple perspectives, and I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a really important project. I wanted to mention the amazing story. You'll love this, James. This is very much up your street. You know The Masked Singer?
Yes, I do.
Currently on, you know The Masked Singer. Even you know that.
I'm familiar with what it is in the loosest terms.
Yeah, so the British version is currently on the map. I think the final might even be the Saturday, actually. I think it is. It's running on concurrently in America, the current series. Did you see who was on it the other night, last night, in fact?
Who?
How about this for a booking, The Masked Singer? So bearing in mind, if you go on The Masked Singer, you have to put this fucking heavy mask on, and you have to sing, obviously, live.
Yeah.
Repeatedly, because obviously the person who left last night in the States had been on it for a few weeks.
Don't say it. Give us a clue. Let's guess.
Okay, how can I give you a clue? I mean, to say he's a veteran is an understatement.
Okay,
that's your clue.
Is that it?
Yeah,
that's the only clue. Is he's obviously American, yeah. Right?
That doesn't massively narrow it down. I've got to be honest.
Yeah. He's in one of the greatest family films of all time.
Ooh.
Maybe two of the greatest films of all time. Certainly one. At least.
I mean, Jimmy Stewart's dead.
Jimmy Stewart's dead, yeah. So
I'm going to say...
The other goes, he's alive.
Steve Martin.
No. Much older than that.
This could be a very long podcast.
Okay, go on.
Okay, I'll tell you. He's 97.
Oh, my God.
He's 97. So who is it who's 97 years old? It is Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, my gosh.
Dick Van Dyke of Mary Poppins fame. That was the thing. For
I can't believe they got him.
Yeah.
And with that heavy
booking.
Head on
what
as
a
well.
Booking. I know. What a booking, though.
And also, I was going to mention earlier when you're talking about bad Cockney accents as well.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic.
That's an amazing signing for them.
Thank you. Yeah. No, I don't
Safe
mind.
To say,
Take
the people
credit.
We get isn't...
No, but they do a good job. They get pretty good people on.
Yeah, but they don't get... It's not Dick Van Dyke.
No, Dick Van Dyke is definitely the greatest... As far as I'm aware, booking on The Masked Singer.
Well, I'm so pleased we could end news with Masked Singer news. Let's move on to this week's second guest. Liaison lands on Apple TV Plus this week and is an international conspiracy thriller that sees two Syrian hackers on the run from the Assad government and both British and French security services trying to bring them in and get hold of the intel that they've inadvertently acquired. Veteran French actor Vincent Cassel plays a contractor brought in by French intelligence to get the job done, and he dropped by to see us, and frankly we needed a similar amoral gun for hire who would cross any line to get the job done, and we turned once more to a modern woman.
We're delighted to be joined on the Pilot TV podcast by the star of Liaison, Vincent Cassel. Hello, sir.
Yeah.
Hi. You're not going to put something extra on the intro for you.
The mood,
you
know.
You starred in espionage projects before. What was different about this one that made you want to sign on?
Well, it's not even really the subject matter. You know, it's about the opportunity suddenly to be able to do that kind of show for Apple. You know, as we know, if you do something for Apple, literally they press a button and there's 150 million who knows about it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's not something you can take lightly. And plus, I in this one in particular, because of the connection I had with the producer, Jean-Benoît Guiligue, I knew I would have the creative latitude to do something my own way. And my idea was to present to the world a French version of a realistic mercenary. You see? So there is this kind of casual thing about him, loneliness, darkness, cynical thing, but in the same time, he has humor and he doesn't take everything seriously, but you know you can count on him. Somehow would be an image of a certain kind of French masculinity.
And Gabriel is one of many characters in the show who has a dark past. We as an audience don't get to find out what it actually is until much later in the season, but you know it from the outset. How does that knowledge inform your performance and your approach to Gabriel's arc? Are you trying to bring in some of those elements early on?
Yes, of course. Well, he's a troubled man, but I had the opportunity through the prep to meet up with some guys who are actually real mercenaries. Oh, wow. And you know how it is, like actors, when we meet those people, of course, we talk and we have information. But what I do is like I watch the way they move. I watch the way they behave, because that's what's going to be more useful for me. And there is something about the normality of what they are. There's nothing, there's no showing off. There's no alpha male pretension. You know, it's all about disappearing in the mass. It's all about being normal. It's all about, it's not about muscles, but they are killers. I don't know if I should say that, but I met a guy. He killed 800 people in his life.
Wow.
So imagine the karma. So imagine the darkness. This guy, of course, he saw everything behind the curtain. He worked for everybody, for the Brits, for the Americans, for the Israelis, for the French, for the Arabia Saudite, for the Vatican, okay? And so he was like super fun, super sympathetic, super super lighthearted. But he killed 800 people. And the paradox between those two information, I mean, this information and the way he was behaving, was even more scary because he looked normal.
That is insane.
That is insane, I agree.
Is that the sort of, I mean, I'm guessing in the course of your prep for multiple projects, you've met a ton of people in different vocations for whatever role you were preparing for. Mm-hmm. Have you ever met anybody else who has that sort of crazy story that helped inform your preparation? Because that sounds like an all-timer right there.
Well, I've met people who are doing... I mean, this is a very dark story and this is a very heavy karma. But, I mean, the good thing about being an actor, it's true, is that suddenly because you're going to do this or that, you know, you're going to be able to really literally infuse with people that come from a totally different world. I remember doing a movie about shamanism. And suddenly I was lost in the forest with shamans, you know, taking psychotropics and be like totally isolated in the middle of nowhere. And that was crazy. And then the next one, you know, you're supposed to be a spy in that particular occasion. And I had, in 5 days, I had to learn how to jump from a plane with a parachute. And so you do it. So it's, you know, that's the really cool thing about being an actor, is you get access to people who have like really, really intense, crazy, interesting life, and you take what you need, and then you go back home.
Mm. That's incredible. Watching this series, you know, hacking is a big part of what these guys are up against. Is this the type of project that makes you think about how much time you spend on your devices and how you use them? Because some of the hacks and some of the things that we see in this show, they're scary to watch and they feel semi-feasible, did I say, in the real world?
No, the truth is that, no, it's not because of the show that I'm conscious of that. I mean, I am conscious of that. I've been conscious of that, I would say, very earlier on. Yes, we spend much too many, we depend on technology in a way that is totally sick when you think about it. And the worst thing is that for people, I don't know how old you are, but I mean, for people like my age, for example, we know what the world was before that. So we have a reference. But the people who grow up with an iPhone and an iPad, they think this is normal. So they have no idea what it is to spend your time watching the sky, being bored. You know, you're not allowed to be bored anymore. Now you're entertained, boom, and then they make you scared. So you're paranoid and they keep you in that space always. And once you're in that space, they can make you whatever they want to do. Look at the world. The world stopped for COVID. The world stopped for COVID. And we had no idea what it was. Yeah. This is crazy, honestly. I mean, so that's the real impact of all that. And we don't have to trip on about being paranoiac about, you know, what could happen. This is already happening. And you know what? It's happening in a very smooth way. So everybody's okay with it.
No, it's scary. It's scary. I wanted to ask about working with Ava Green. Both of you, that you're so great together in this show. And you convey so much at times with very little dialogue. It's just meaningful looks between you. Was the chemistry between both of you immediate, or did you?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
You know why? Because I think we were really curious one for another. I've been fascinated by Eva since I saw her in Dreamers, you know, the Bertolucci movie back in the 90s. I always thought she was carrying herself in a way that nobody does really. She has this mysterious, elegant, instinctive way of acting. And her career speaks for itself, by the way, because look, she's French and nobody's quite clear about that. You know, she's called Evergreen, which is actually not Evergreen. It's Eva Grön, because I think her father is Danish. So she's not even English, you know. So it's somebody you're not quite clear with what to think about her. You don't know. You know, she's and when you're mysterious, you can make believe more or less what you want, you know. I always thought she was so particular, and strangely enough, working with her, I recognize myself in her.
And you're next working with her on The Three Musketeers, yes. Which I'm very excited about. Is there any particular version of that story that you have previously latched onto, and how does the one that you're working on shake things up a little bit?
Well, strangely enough, it's a very, very French story, of course, but it hasn't been done by the French for the past 75 years. Can you believe that? Wow. This is crazy. For the little story, my father, who was an actor too, played the king in the Richard Lester version.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So my memories as a kid were being in Spain, because they shot it in Spain at the time with Oliver Reed and Christopher Lee and all those, and Michael York at the time, Geraldine Chaplin. And so I would see the sets, I would see the costumes, and suddenly, boom, 50 years later, or let's say 50 years later, yeah. Here I am in the same costume and same kind of sets, except that now it's made by the French. So I hope that will be closer to the books that it's ever been made.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. Final question for you. I recently watched the film Magic Mike's Last Dance, directed by a guy I know you know, Steven Soderbergh.
Yes.
And it made me think of you, because one of my favorite scenes in Ocean's 12 is your iconic dance through the lasers scene. And you are, of course, a trained ballet dancer. And I was just wondering, what are your memories of shooting that? One. And two, are you mad that Steven has not asked you to be in the Magic Mike movie? Because you could do it.
Alors, first of all, no, I'm not mad at Steven Soderbergh, because, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't need to continue with anything. I really enjoyed working with him. But, I mean, I never thought about, you know, like, why didn't he call me? I mean, I got other shit to do. He does. And if one day some people need to meet again, it will happen. You cannot force anything. But for that scene in particular, which is actually a very important scene for me, because, you see, I've been living in Brazil. I'm almost Brazilian in a way. You know, I work there. I still have a production company over there. I spend a lot of time over there. I was an actual Brazilian citizen. I'm totally crazy about samba and all the musicality coming from Brazil. I think it's one of the richest in the world. So I'm really attached to that country. And when I read the script of Ocean's 12, I was in Brazil in my house, and I was in my hammock. Yes, I do have a hammock. And I was reading it, and I was reading the scene, except that this scene looked and made me think about Entrapment. You remember?
Yeah.
With Catherine Zeta-Jones. And I was like, how can we make it different? At the time, I was training capoeira. You know capoeira?
Yeah, absolutely.
I trained capoeira for years. And so the next week, I was going back to Rome, to where I was supposed to meet with Stephen. And I said, do you know what capoeira is? He said, no, what is capoeira? And so I started to dance and jump around the bed and do shit like this. And I was telling him, look, maybe this guy is a little more international, you know, he's multicultural, he's aware of stuff that many Americans are not really aware of, and na-da-da-da-da-da. And he said, okay, I buy it. And so the fact that there is capoeira in a big Hollywood movie was my little present to the Brazilian people.
I love that so much. It's an incredible scene. I could talk to you about that for ages, but I've got to let you go. Vincent Cassel, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers, man.
That was Vincent Cassel. And time now for this week's reviews. And we begin this week with Fleischman is in Trouble, a.k.a. Eisenberg Fox, which could have been another name for this one. But this one lands on Disney+.
They should get Plus. On the taglines.
Yeah, they could. Yeah. They should definitely hire me. This is based on the 2019 novel by Taffy Bredessa Akner, who also serves as the showrunner here. This aired last year on the States on Hulu and sees Jesse Eisenberg as the eponymous Dr. Fleischman, recently divorced from Claire Danes Rachel, and exploring the uncharted waters of modern dating apps, which is code for it's very booby. All of which is kind of going swimmingly for him until his ex-wife drops off the face of the earth without explanation, leaving their kids in his care. Boyne, please tell us how much trouble Fleischman is in fact in.
He's in quite a lot of trouble, yeah, because as you say, although, I mean, it is, again, this is a whole premise, slight spoiler thing, but I mean, the premise is that the whole point of the thing is he's been abandoned all of a sudden by his wife. They're, as the show begins, they're in the process of divorcing each other. So Jesse Eisenberg's character, Dr. Toby, and Claire Danes' character, Rachel, who is she runs a kind of talent agency for like Broadway stars. Yeah.
Theater
she's very
agent.
Successful mm. theatre, thank you, theatre agent, talent agency, I mean, you know, similar.
Sorry.
but you know, she's still in his life. And then the big kind of shock moment in the first episode is that she abandons him and their kids seemingly forever without any, like at 3 a.m. or whatever, and just refuses to be in contact with him forevermore. So the show, much like the novel, is very much an exploration of that particular shocking outcome and dilemma and reality that he suddenly has to look after his kids 24/7, and one of which his teenage daughter is absolutely not happy with him whatsoever, whereas his little cute little boy is much more goes with the flow and is much more, you know, nice to his dad. At the same time, to help him kind of cope with this, with his divorce, really, he kind of gets back in touch with two of his best mates, who are Seth, played by one Adam Brody.
Yes, Adam Brody playing Seth. This must have just set your pants on fire, okay?
Extraordinary. And by the way, we have to say, Adam Brody looking phenomenal for his age. I mean...
What do you mean his age? Well, he's not old!
Boyd, he's not old. He's like... I mean, I would argue that...
What
know.
I'm saying is...
What is he, like 30 or something?
He's 43.
Is he? Okay, yes, then he doesn't look quite good.
Thank you. How long is it since the OC? We forget how long. It's quite a long time.
What was the OC? It was like 2006?
I don't know. I thought it was earlier than that.
I
but anyway.
I think so.
He's barely aged, is my point I'm making, since the OC.
He's still
2003.
Good.
2003. I think he looks almost exactly the same as he did back then in the OC. And his other best friend, Libby, played by Lizzie Caplan, who, in the extraordinary twist, and this is the other thing that makes the novel and the show so unusual, is she is the narrator of his story.
Yeah.
So effectively, and this is all from the book, this is all from the brilliantly named Taffy Bredessa Akner's book, and she kind of, she found this brilliant device to have a story that is a kind of about his masculinity and him discovering the sex apps, the dating apps.
The sex apps.
Well, I mean, that's what they are. And that's what he's made quite clear, because as soon as his discovery that there are hundreds of women in Manhattan and the five boroughs of New York willing to have almost instant sex with him when he meets them, hooks up with them on the dating/sex apps. And it's an exploration of that and what that means for a man who's just hit 41, as he has in the show, with two kids, whose wife has just left him, but through the lens of his best friend, who is a woman. It's such a clever device because it kind of is makes it more of a commentary on what's going on now with relationships and with intimacy and all of that. And I have to say, I read the book, and the book is fantastic. But what makes it kind of fantastic is her voice is so interesting and funny. And they do a lot of voiceover, but I felt like they had to capture that key element of the book that is his story told by her. And she's involved, but tangentially, pretty tangentially. And I thought they did a brilliant job, even to the point where the cover of the book, at least I think the American cover, I'm pretty sure the British cover, was Upside Down Manhattan. Mm. And they used that as the opening shot is Upside Down Manhattan.
And the closing shot.
And the closing shot of the episode, yeah. To kind of reflecting his general discombobulation as a character, what he's going through, this huge changes in his life. I think it's really well cast. Jesse Eisenberg is absolutely perfect for Dr. Toby. Claire Danes is perfect for the wife. Great to see Adam Brody back. Lizzie Kaplan does a really good job of narrating this thing. It's got it has a brilliant kind of montage of sex, because I refer to it being very booby,
yeah,
but it's also bummy.
It is very bummy.
You get a lot of the Eisenberg butt cheeks. Quite rightly equal ops, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it is, and this is a classic, this is what I was brought up before about how people are complaining and saying there should be less sex and nudity on television and in films. These absolute idiots. It's central to this whole story. It's all about what happens to a man when he suddenly realises he can have apparently carefree, consequence-free sex.
It's all about his sexual awakening. Yeah. He's suddenly attractive to the opposite
and
sex,
she can't believe
his luck.
She, by the way, has a very healthy sex life of her own. Mm. You know, Claire Danes' character, which we see as well. So it's. I thought it was an exemplary example of how
exemplary
case study in how to adapt quite a book that's all about the tone of voice of the book, but turn it into a really good visual. Looks beautiful, you know, really well done TV series. So I think it's great.
Don't disagree. I really like this. I thought it was so smart and funny. And I really liked the fresh take on the fact that it was, you know, we're seeing this time, we're used to seeing a man leaving a woman, right? Seeking a better life, a better upgrading model, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, the woman having to rebuild her life, take care of the kids. I just love that they turned the whole thing on its head and that actually this time it was the man who was left holding the kids. Thought it was a great twist. And the equal op sex thing, I thought was great, because even though it is booby, James, there is a lot of bum action.
There is.
And also I really loved how the camera started spin, you know, like literally the sex made the room spin. I thought that was a delightful touch. And yeah, just very happy about Adam Brody being back on our screens, because I used to love him as Seth in the OC. And I think the dynamic between all three friends who haven't seen each other for 15 years, I think it's a great, I just really liked all the characters, both individually. I thought they were relatable in different ways. And I thought it's really interesting that it became like, obviously he was left by this woman, and then it's also about the ripple effects in the school parent community, because then everyone started reassessing their relationships. Oh my God, are we not having enough sex? Is my partner going to leave me? You know, and this is what happens, right? At a certain age and people are starting to get divorced or whatever, people start freaking out. But yeah, I thought Eisenberg was really well cast in this role, yeah.
He has big neurotic energy, which I think works very well in this particular character. To be fair, though, I thought Lizzie Kaplan was the standout for me. Just not just because her narration is an exemplary example of narration, genuinely, her narration is fantastic, but also her character of Libby is really, really interesting. And her own, the fact that Fleischman and what he's going through becomes a mirror for her own life and what she's going through, I think is quite interesting. I will say that I think they perhaps misrepresent the appeal of dating apps slightly in this show. It's not quite, I would argue, the all-you-can-eat buffet that they make it out to be. It is, in fact, a relentless hellscape, but the less said about that, the better. I also quite enjoyed the relationship he has with his two kids. Solly, played by Maxim Swinton, who's this quite geeky little boy who he kind of gets on with. And then at the other end of the spectrum, there is Hannah, his daughter, played by Mira Mahoney, who absolutely cannot stand him. He has no dialogue with her. They have no relationship. They do not communicate at all.
She finds him super cringe, doesn't she?
She finds him embarrassing, but there seems to be a contempt there. And I think, you know, I think that speaks quite truthfully to often what happens in a divorce, where sometimes children will, for not always for a good reason, like attach to one parent and almost vilify the other one, regardless of, you know, fault or blame or whatnot.
Well, I think it's more, it's like a reflection of Rachel, because we get the impression that, we know that Rachel was very like self-obsessed. She was very all about, you know, making money, you know, elevating, social elevation. And she looked down on his career as a doctor. And it seems like it's rubbed off on the daughter. And she, you know, is very embarrassed about the fact that they don't live in a plush house anymore and all this kind of stuff. So I feel like it's partly that as well.
Yeah.
By the way, his kind of like his apartment, this new apartment is supposed to be like a, you know, like a
the
little,
hovel.
A shell hovel. It's like a, on the 25th story of a
on the Upper East Side. It's this massive apartment.
The views of.
I want to live in a hovel.
With a bellhop.
One of the criticisms of the book that it did polarize people to some extent, because a lot of people were like, we're supposed to feel for these, you know, incredibly privileged, well-off Manhattanites, you know, having loads of sex, you know. It's like, oh, poor, woe is him. But
yeah, but that's like anything. It's like Sex in the City and like, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, it is very much like that. Like, he's like different women every single night. And it's just, it's kind of right. Also, he's getting sent an alarming amount of like nudie pictures from all these girls he's matched with. Again, maybe the New York dating scene is just fundamentally very different to the London
one.
You need
to move to Manhattan.
Clearly, that is what needs to happen. But either way, Fleischman is in trouble over on Disney Plus, beginning on the 23rd of February, which is Thursday. Next up, we have Desperate Measures on Channel 5, which sees Amanda Abington as a bank employee whose son gets mixed up with a local drug dealer, leaving her with a debt she cannot possibly repay. That is until, shall we say, a work-based opportunity unexpectedly presents itself. Kay, how desperate do people need to be to watch this?
Right, so here's the thing.
Yeah.
I was really liking this up until two-thirds of the way through.
Okay.
Because I just thought, well, Amanda Abington is amazing.
Yes.
And she's fantastic as the bank clerk mother, as you've described. I mean, yes. I'm a little bit zoned out, so I don't know how much she said. Sorry. he's thrown to me.
No,
first.
You feel free. Just cover whatever ground you want to.
But she's really great. And the son, who's a newcomer, Jesse Sescati McFarlane, have I said that right? Anyway, he plays Finn. he's also fab, and I just really liked it because I felt like it was good and it was plausible. You could see how he might find himself in that kind of situation and make the decision he does, and also you understand Rowan's panic as a mother, that, you know, that she's desperate to save her son from this really violent gang leader who's now wanting his drug money back, right? So I was thinking, this is fab. I'm going to become, you know, this is going to be my new thing. And then a series of events happen that are so ludicrous, like just mad, like coincidental, unlikely, that it just totally lost me. And yeah, it was still entertaining, but it really irked me that it suddenly went down this far-fetched route when it was so rooted, I think, in reality, and had so much potential that, yeah, I'm out.
It is a bit of a tonal shift, isn't it? Because up until that point, you're kind of like, it feels
gritty,
like it does have this, it has a veneer of realism to it. And at that point, it just gets a bit daft.
Oh, mate. There's two, I mean, I don't know why I suddenly went all like, whoa, mate.
Oh, mate. Mate. Oh, mate. Oh,
you're living in the estate where.
Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah,
you're completely right. These two things happen. And I was like, I rewound it because I thought, I must have misunderstood that. And I was like, oh, wait, we're saying this is happening now, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not so much a tonal shift as a narrative.
Yeah.
It's a narrative shift that is.
It inherently almost shifts the tone of the show, though, doesn't it? Yeah.
Maybe.
It then becomes bonkers.
Yes.
Maybe. But I mean, it is extraordinary how, I know what process by which, because basically this has got a really good story and a really good premise that, you know, really nice bank clerk about to get laid off, played by the brilliant Amanda Abington, has a lovely son, teenage son, who's really, really good, the actor, Cascati McFarlane. And, you know, they're really close. And he gets, you know, he's got bad people on the estate where they live who embroil him in something that he doesn't want anything to do with. And he has to, and he now has got the police and them on his, in a case trying to find him. And he's now could potentially ruin his life.
And you feel for him because he's a good kid.
Totally feel for him.
Yeah.
And all the way through, in that storyline, which is going to push her to the desperate measure of wanting to rob a bank, that's clearly the thing that it's building up to. The premise, again, not a spoiler, but they kind of show that right at the beginning because it starts with her at the beginning talking about what she's done. And that all makes sense. And then, as you say, you get that moment. And let's just call it... I'm specifically calling it the tattoo moment, right? The tattoo on the back of the neck.
That's one moment.
And then... you're introduced to that character,
yeah,
right? And you're like, and that, you know, who the guy plays, he's very good always and everything. But yeah,
the world, it's the world such is a small place, who, not that small.
At some point, they thought, well, we have to have this thing happen because then maybe there's not enough story otherwise. But there is enough story. You got, I felt like there's more than enough going on without that thing to come in to make it, because it does seem so ludicrous. And it is, yeah, it's a real shame because they've done such a brilliant job with the performances and the direction. You know, it's got really good, you know, it's quite long shots of her, you know, running. There's a chase sequence that's really well done, I thought, you know. And then you get this incredibly implausible thing happen.
And then after that, another thing happens where you're just like, really? That, I mean, that's all really coincidental as well. I don't know why they... I don't know. Then I got angry about it. I went from being disappointed to then very angry. What did you think, James?
Well, this reminded me of... There's a 2019 film called County Lines, which kind of covers similar ground, but it's really, really gritty, very real and very dark. Mm. And I kind of thought this was going to go down similar territory until the event. But I suppose the thing I will give this is that it successfully manages to be incredibly stressful for good 75% of the episode. Like, I found it really anxiety inducing, which is obviously what it was going for. So I think it does that very effectively. So to that extent, I thought it succeeded in what it set out to do. But exactly as both of you said, like, I think when they make that narrative choice, and I kind of see what they were trying to do, like they're trying to get from sort of like A to another letter, shall we say, further down the alphabet. And they're like, well, we don't want to get through all of those letters, so let's just skip over all of those and go straight to this. And they take this narrative shortcut to get and I was like, no, maybe just take a little bit of time and weave a more believable through line. And then to then double down on it at the end of the episode with another just utterly ridiculous moment. And I was just like, oh, you've lost me. You have lost me a little bit.
It's a shame. It's a real shame.
It's a shame because she really gives it her all. Amanda Hamilton, she always does. Like, she has to get hysterical in this show.
Oh, she's really good. No, like, a couple of scenes, she's brilliant.
And he's really good as well. So all the performances are great. I just think, someone should have intervened and said, no, it doesn't need to have that. Must be another way to get to, as you say.
There must be another way.
There must be another way. It's a shame.
Never mind. Anyway, Desperate Measures then, which is on Channel of the Five. On which day, Boyd?
It is on Channel 5, Tuesday to Friday, stripped
across the week.
And by the way, I believe you said, I should have interrupted at the time, but you know what I'm like, I don't like to be too rude, but I think you said that Fleischman is in Trouble is on Thursday, I think it's on Wednesday.
Is it?
Yeah, I believe so.
It's on Wednesday?
Yeah.
Hang on, let me check the calendar. The calendar says Thursday, and surely, Boyd, as someone with access to the calendar, if that were the case, you yourself would have changed it.
James is literally the only person who uses the calendar.
So it would seem. Anyway, apparently it's on Wednesday. Okay, good, fine, good. Well, that was Desperate Measures. Let's get on to this week's final review, which is Liaison, the latest flex from Apple, reminding us that they have budgets larger than the GDP of a small industrialized nation. And as we've already heard, this stars Vincent Cassel, as well as Eva Green and Peter Mullen, in an English-French geopolitical thriller.
Get out.
Thank you. Boydie, voulez-vous regarder Liaison ce soir?
Oh, God.
Amazing and very good. I'm delighted, by the way, with your general pronunciation of Vincent
Cassel.
Vincent.
Well, I can't call him Vincent Cassel, can I? Do you remember the shit I used to get into for calling Michael Husman Husman? Yeah. Like, people got quite upset with me over that, I'm making a real effort now.
I'd still stick to Michael Husman.
Michael Husman.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Vincent Cassel and Eva Green and Gerard Lanvin are the stars of this.
Peter Mullen.
Yeah. Peter Mullen. Are the stars. Apologies.
I'm not getting involved in whatever this is.
This is a British-French co-production for Apple TV Plus, which partly explains why there are so many British and French people in it.
Yes.
It is very brilliantly made. So it's Apple TV Plus.
Yes.
It's got that very elegant visual quality to it.
By which you mean people are literally throwing £50 notes at the screen all the way through
exactly.
the episode.
It looks astonishing. Yep. It's got an opening kind of action sequence that's fantastic, like thrilling kind of, you know, explosions and this, that, and the other. It's got grabs of kidnappings, and it's got on top of that, intercut with all this, the kind of political machinations going on in Paris and London. So it cuts between Paris, London, and Syria, basically. Mm. And the idea is that these two guys in Syria, hackers in Syria, are wanted by everyone for various reasons, and they're all kind of fighting over these guys, this duo of hackers. For some reason, which I'm sure we'll get to in the kind of geopolitical confusion of the thing, the French guy who's organizing this whole thing is really against the British having any like intel from these hackers. Yeah. Like, well, are we all supposed to be on the same side? I'm sure they'll get to.
Brexit, Boyd, Brexit.
Brexit, yeah, exactly. He really hates, really, really firmly wants the British to lose out on this fucking intel, which is one of the drivers of the story. And then on top of that, you be the judge. Is it a spoiler? There's like this kind of huge, big, disastrous thing that happens in the middle of the first episode involving flooding. I'm not going to say any more, right? Which is like suddenly becomes almost like a disaster movie, doesn't it? Halfway through. So enough of it being like a kidnapping thriller.
There's a lot going
on. Espionage, revenge, geopolitical machinations, and a disaster movie all thrown in to this unbelievably lavish series, first episode. By the end of it, I was like, well, that is impressive, but I'm not sure I have the fucking clue what's going on or why, you know, all the interconnections. And obviously, it's only the first episode, and I think it's going to be all about explaining what the hell is going on, I presume, as
well,
it plays
out.
Well, you'd hope so. I have only watched the first episode. I do feel the need to carry on, mainly to work out what the hell is going on, because I found it quite... I think it's deliberately confusing in a way, piling on the subplots and stuff.
There's a lot of plotting.
A lot of plotting, a lot of locations, a lot of flooding. But, you know, Vincent Cassel is great. Eva Green, I know she's had a controversial time recently, hasn't she? She had an incredible legal case. Did you read about that?
Yes, this is a show in which she hunts down peasants for sport.
yes, exactly. So, I mean, she is brilliant, though. And she is the, rather kind of unlikely... kind of SPAD, I guess you call it, special advisor to Peter Mullen's politician.
Peter Mullen's
character. And that relationship is really interesting. So she has to take orders from him. So it's got a great cast. It looks fantastic. Feels incredibly authentic. Everything that's happening in it has had a lavish amount of money spent on it. I am confused as it's happening at the moment, but I will carry on.
It also has equal opportunities subtitles.
It does.
The French and the English is subtitled. Everything is subtitled.
Yeah, that was weird. Yeah,
you cannot move without bumping into a subtitle.
How did you get on with it?
Yeah,
how
much you love a subtitle.
Not well. Yes, I must admit, I looked for ways to turn off the subtitles for the English bit, and there was no way. I just had to put up with them, which was not great. Oh, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I find it so confusing why you get so... like agitated by it.
Yes, this is something that people are like, I don't know what they're talking about. This was a conversation that came up on Pilot Plus last week, which was my slight aversion to the subtitling of English language stuff. I do not enjoy subtitles where they are not
like
needed.
Reading.
I don't know. No, it's because my eyes are drawn to them. It's almost like they draw the eye away from what's going on the screen. And it's like, if I can understand the dialogue, I don't need the subtitles. Make them go away. Anyway, Kay, what did you think of Liaison?
I enjoyed it. I found it confused. I think I worked out most of it, but yeah, I was gripped by it. I found it very like fast paced and exciting. And that's it, really. I mean, I don't have much to say about
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Kay.
I mean, it was really good, but I'm just wary of giving away too many spoilers.
Yeah, you don't want to get too much into the plotting, sure.
It's very spoiler heavy, if to say much more. But what I will say is the end is very intriguing. And as a side note, I do love Eva Green's windows.
She does have good windows.
Good windows. She gives good windows. Yeah.
Good fenestration.
Which you'll hear on no other podcast. I mean,
slightly creepy. But yeah.
James at the window. Yeah.
Talking about Eva Green. Fenestration. Yeah. Yes. No, it's dense, to be sure. But it has a certain... I love that kind of that old school geopolitical, lots of action, lots of things happening, lots of intrigue, lots of set pieces. They don't even need to be big ones. But just Vincent Cassel running through hotel corridors, stabbing people in lifts, and just it has almost like a Bourne-like quality. And they look at some handheld camera stuff, there's some close quarters choreography. It's all a bit sort of dirty, but it has a a realism to it. I don't know if it's realistic. I'm not a spy. I've never hung out or done a ride along with MI6.
It has an aura.
Yeah,
it has the aura of reality.
Yeah,
which is hard. That's a hard thing.
It feels realistic. Yeah. Whether or not it is a whole other matter. But I thought it was great. And again, I think what really helps these shows that Apple put together is because they have so much money, and it feels like it's got big screen sensibilities in terms of the budget, in terms of the cinematography, the way it's shot. It has that very Apple, very cinematic feel.
Big screen energy.
It's got big screen energy. Yes, exactly that. It has big screen energy. Loved it. Thought it was very good. And I will add it to my watch list in between For All Mankind and You Season 2 and apparently The Traitors. but this comes to Apple TV Plus on the Friday, the 24th of February. Also out this week, we have You and Me. This is produced by the one, the only Russell T. Davis. And this has been described officially as a romantic comedy drama with all the hooks and twists of a thriller, which is a genre contortion. Even Netflix's category system would boggle at. But you can hear all about that on Pilot TV Plus. If you're not already a subscriber, you can become one over at empireonline.com/pilottv for just $1.99 a month. Boydie, what else is out this week?
There's The Consultant on Prime Video on Friday the 24th, which is a kind of comedy thriller, I believe, starring Christoph Waltz as the consultant of the title, who basically consults on people's lives, as far as I
know. You're not making it sound very interesting.
Well, it could be interesting. We probably should have considered it for review, to be honest, but I think I left it off the list. It seems like quite a big deal, I think. Semi-big deal. Christoph Waltz is always brilliant, obviously. So I think that should be exciting, The Consultant. I'm more excited about the new alleging. Season 3, I think, of Outer Banks, which is like Netflix's teen, kind of their Dawson's Creek, really, I believe. I watched a couple of episodes a long time ago, and it was quite enjoyably stupid. They were looking for treasure somewhere in the sea or something. I don't know. That's back on Thursday, the 23rd. Beyond Paradise, James, you'll be thrilled about this. This starts on Friday, 8 o'clock on BBC. It's a spin-off from Death in Paradise. I mentioned this the other week. And Kay actually is all over this because she hosted the Q&A, I believe, for the launch for Her Majesty's BBC One.
Yes, I did. I'm the correspondent because I got to go to Guadeloupe for Death in Paradise set trip.
I see.
Set visit. And it is a spin-off with Chris Marshall. So any Death in Paradise fans out there, you'll want to tune in.
Or any Love Actually fans. Chris Marshall?
I don't think anyone who loves Love Actually, and I count myself among those people,
I know what you're gonna
has
say.
Any affection for Chris Marshall's character or his storyline in that film.
The worst storyline
by far
in Love Actually, but we can't blame Chris for that. Mm. No. But is it good, Kay?
It is. Yeah. If you like Death in Paradise, you'll like this.
Yeah. There you go. I think that's mainly it. Yeah.
Then what is our pick of the week?
Oh, gosh.
Why mentioned perforated eardrum?
That was quite terrifying.
It better be worth it, boy. Yeah.
Sorry, The Reluctant Traveller, that Eugene Levy thing that I mentioned last week.
That you were watching last week.
Friday on the Apple TV Plus and is very entertaining.
He can say it now because the embargo is gone.
I can say
last week he was just alluding to it.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Okay. Pick of the week.
Fleischmann.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to be Fleischmann.
Oh, for me, it would be Liaison. Huh? With Vincent Cassel and Peter Mullen.
Is it just because you want to say those names again?
A lot, yes. Peter Mullen. Exciting stuff. All right, fine. Well, that is it for this week's show. If you even vaguely enjoyed it, then surely a review and a 5-star rating is not too much to ask. And if you want to tell us what you think directly, then do follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Pilot TV Pod, as well as at James C. Dyer, at Boyd Hilton, and at Kay Ribeiro. On next week's show, Sanjeev Bhaskar will be joining us. Hooray! As we get to see the long-awaited latest series of Unforgotten, plus Sam Claflin will be on the show to talk about Daisy Jones and the Six. Will he, Kay, in fact, be coming on the show?
Yes, he will.
Okay, just checking.
He better be.
If we have a little chat tomorrow, he will be.
Okay, good. Kay will be talking to him tomorrow. There'll be some other shows on here as well, probably. But I don't know what they are. But until then, I have The Traitors to watch. And you can hear how that went on Thursday. Pray for me. Pilot out.